Hello, good evening, and welcome to Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebarb. I am Pastor Zach, and tonight we are so close to being done with the book of Genesis. We're just going to go through chapter 48 tonight, because in this particular chapter, we more see historical things than we really do. Mainstream spiritual applications, like we're gonna, talk about relationships with your parents and, having reverence and reconnecting and these kinds of things, kind of a lot of the similar themes that have led up to the last couple chapters in this book. But we're not going to be getting into anything that's a quote-unquote central focus tonight as far as points go, because what we see tonight is more based in historical record than it is actually based in, us looking at life application points. We're more going to see kind of why things begin to happen the way that they do for Joseph and his sons and the nation of Israel as a whole, and kind of what brings about a lot of what we know about Israel, not only today, but in parts of the Old Testament that we are a little bit more familiar with. Excuse me. And so as we're getting ready to go through this chapter, I'm going to give everybody a quick reminder again. At the most, we are 3 weeks out from making the major change to the podcast that we've been talking about since we finally got things back up and running again at the beginning of May, end of April. And that is that we are going to be taking a direction with this podcast that goes from what we've been doing, which, we did a survey of the entire Bible to start with, and what each book is about, and who wrote them, and what the central themes are, and who the intended audience is, these kinds of things. And in turn, what we're actually going to start doing is we are going to start answering more relevant, more misunderstood and controversial topics, not only in our culture, but even for the Bible itself. Things such as homosexuality, abortion, proper roles of people within God's churches and within families, and how all these things are set up and why they are set up the way that they are. But we're also going to be caveating that with your questions, because the main goal of this entire podcast is to get you more interested in studying the Bible. So we've been kind of taking a survey, I guess. It's definitely not a formal one, to say the least, but more discussions that I've had with people in my congregation, discussions that I've had with other pastors and other church members, or even, people that when we go out and do our community outreach events, that it seems to be that there's not necessarily a lack of desire to study the Bible, but rather a lack of knowing how to do that, and not just not knowing how to do it or how to begin doing it, but even a lack of confidence and even to some degree a little bit of fear of, what happens if I don't get it right, or if I don't know the answer, or if I don't know how to search out the answer, right? And so what we are hoping to do is that the main goal here in the next at least 3 weeks, it may actually be two, because I think that we can do tonight's, and then we can do next Monday's, and then after that, we will be moving into the new direction that I'm talking about. But the main thing that we would like to see is that for anybody that's listening that has questions, if you're reading a passage of Scripture, you don't understand it, you can get in the comments, let me know, I'll send you an email address, you can reach out to me, and I'll answer your questions individually. But then we are going to answer those questions here, because if you have them, I promise you there's many, many other people that have them as well. And so we're going to be taking questions from you guys that are the audience on here, but also even from my congregation, because I want them to be more engaged and more intrigued and studying the Bible more, and to not only do it, but kind of do it in a way where there's no wrong answer and there's no wrong question. You know what I'm saying? That you can feel freedom to come to whatever conclusions you want to come to, and then we can iron out whether or not that has any plausibility to it, you know? And so we're hoping that we'll be getting enough questions for that to take off. I know people can be very shy, so I don't expect a whole lot of that in the beginning. But if we're not getting that in the beginning, then we're going to be looking at lists of questions and controversial topics, difficult topics for this day and time that come from the Bible that we're going to be answering and going through together here on this podcast. So definitely mark your calendars. If you have any questions, now's the time to send them in. We're going to be definitely moving in that direction, having a lot of those kinds of conversations. And hopefully we'll all learn something from it, and there'll be something to gain from it as well. But moving back into what's going on tonight. As I said a moment ago, most of what we're looking at tonight, there's not a lot of strong application. It's going to be a lot more historical and kind of looking at the way things are by when we come into the book of Exodus, why they are the way they are, and what are some of the adjustments to the plan of God and to the change of how the tribes are laid out. You know, one of the biggest questions that's always asked is, well, why is there no tribe of Joseph? Well, we kind of learn about why that is tonight, that Joseph's tribe becomes two different tribes because we drop one of the other ones that had behaved so horribly. And, you know, so there's a lot of these kinds of things that come into being in tonight's chapter. But the short of it is this. Tonight, Jacob is preparing for his death. And he's calling in Joseph and then Joseph's sons to give them his blessings and kind of a history lesson along with that. Now, something that you need to understand as we're going into this chapter is that we don't have a culture that understands, let alone honors, this idea of a blessing. You see remnants of it to a degree. A really good place in our culture where a remnant of this idea of a blessing still exists is typically when a young man asks a woman's father for permission or for his blessing, as the saying goes, to marry a young woman. Now, in today's time, that's much more formality than it really is anything else. I remember when my wife and I were talking about getting married, which was not too long after we had met, and she had stated, you know, she wanted her father's blessing, and I was like, well, I mean, you know, yeah, sure, we can do that. I was raised old school, you know, to some degree, but I'll just be blunt with you. There was an understanding that really, regardless of how that conversation went, we were still getting married. That wasn't going to change anything at all. And for those of you on here that might be older listening to that, you may be ready to hit me through the microphone. But you have to keep in mind that the time period that we are not only living in now, but also what that really means. And that what that means of a blessing is not just you're asking for the permission of the father to do something, but rather it means that the individual who is blessing you is giving you something that you do not deserve with the understanding that it is God's will you have it, okay? And in today's day and time, I'll just be blunt with you, many fathers and many men have really lost any quote-unquote leg to stand on with this idea of being able to have a blessing. I think that there are fathers who genuinely could enforce such a thing in this day and time, but only ones who are decent enough with their daughters that their daughters respect their opinion more than they do, you know, their own desire for whoever the individual is that's asking. And so this idea of blessing is much more a symbolic thing. It's much more essentially a taking of time to respect and to honor one's parents. But that's not something that you just do to do it. It's also something that is earned. And you're going to see that tonight here because Jacob is blessing Joseph, the son who he really didn't put a lot of effort into searching for. He arrived at his own assumptions about what happened to Joseph. That's one thing that the brothers point out when they reconcile is that they didn't actually tell Jacob that Joseph had been killed. They just gave him his coat with blood on it, and Jacob assumed the rest. He didn't go hunt for his son. He didn't go to make sure that the blood on the jacket meant that there was a body. He didn't do anything but immediately start to grieve. So there's a lot to unpack here as Jacob begins blessing his son. So let's kind of look at this, and like I said, there's not a huge application. We're going to talk about reverencing your parents a little bit, but outside of that scope, this is going to be more historical as we're getting things ready for the book of Exodus, is really what's going on in these chapters. It says, "And it came to pass after these things that one told Joseph, Behold, thy father is sick. And he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. And one told Jacob and said, Behold, thy son Joseph cometh unto thee. And Israel strengthened himself and sat upon the bed. And Jacob said unto Joseph, God Almighty appeared unto me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me. And he said unto me, Behold, I will make thee fruitful and multiply thee, and I will make of thee a multitude of people, and will give this land to thy seed after thee for an everlasting possession. And now thy two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, which were born unto thee in the land of Egypt, before I came unto thee into Egypt, are mine. As Reuben and Simeon, they shall be mine. And thy issue, excuse me, which thou begettest after them, shall be thine, and shall be called after the name of their brethren in their inheritance. And as for me, when I came from Padan, Rachel died by me in the land of Canaan in the way, when yet there was but a little way to come unto Ephrath. And I bare to her there in the way of Ephrath, the same as Bethlehem. And Israel beheld Joseph's sons, and said, Who are these? And Joseph said unto his father, They are my sons, whom God hath given me in this place. And he said, Bring them, I pray thee, unto me, and I will bless them. So, what's going on here is that one of the servants for Jacob comes to Joseph and says, Behold, thy father is sick. And the idea that's presented here of him being sick is more connected to his natural aging. It's not that Jacob gets sick and, you know, he dies of some illness or disease, but rather that he is starting to get old enough that his body is naturally wearing out. And he is not doing well. He's reaching the end of his time. And so Joseph gets his sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, and they go up to visit grandpa. And when Joseph comes in, Jacob, that idea of strengthening himself, kind of he puts on the strong man routine. He sits up in the bed and he's, oh, you know, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm good, everything's okay. But he looks at Joseph and he gives him a lesson, essentially, of what has happened to him in his life. And he says, God appeared to him at Luz, which is also better known by all of you as Bethel. That's another name for Bethel. And he blessed me there. And the blessing was that he'll make us fruitful, and we will multiply, and there will be made into a nation, and we will be given this land, and it will be an everlasting possession. And he tells Joseph, I want to pass on this blessing to you and your sons. Meaning that even though Joseph is one of the younger brothers, he is the one who is chosen to quote unquote carry this blessing forward. And the blessing that he gives to them is the promise that if you will do as God tells you to do and go to the land that God has given us, God will bless you, and if not, God will curse you. And then he tells him that his sons will be like they are Jacob's sons. Essentially, in place of Reuben and Simeon, who you know had committed quite some atrocious acts in their lifetime. And after all of this is said, he tells him about when his mother dies. Okay? And essentially, what Jacob is doing is he's telling him the two best moments in Jacob's life. The first one being the call of God and the blessing that God gave him. And the second one being the blessing of his wife, who he lost as they were traveling back, okay? And where she is buried, which is a place that would become to be known as Bethlehem, the Bethlehem that you and I know about. And so, after he gives Joseph this blessing, he hears somebody move behind Joseph, which are, of course, Joseph's two sons. And he says, who are these? And Joseph says, these are my sons, which God's blessed me with here. And then it says in verse 10, now the eyes of Israel were dim for age, so that he could not see. And he brought them near unto him, and he kissed them and embraced them. And Israel said unto Joseph, I had not thought to see thy face, and lo, God hath shewed me also thy seed. And Joseph brought them out from between his knees, and he bowed himself with his face to the earth. And Joseph took them both, Ephraim in his right hand toward Israel's left hand, and Manasseh in his left hand toward Israel's right hand, and brought them near unto him. And Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it upon Ephraim's head, who was the younger, and his left hand upon Manasseh's head, guiding his hands wittingly. For Manasseh was the firstborn. And he blessed Joseph and said, God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac did walk, the God which fed me all my life long unto this day, the angel which redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads, and let my name be named on them, and the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. And when Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand upon the head of Ephraim, it displeased him. And he held up his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head unto Manasseh's head. And Joseph said unto his father, not so, my father, for this is the firstborn. Put thy right hand upon his head. And his father refused and said, I know it, my son, I know it. He also shall become a people, but he also shall be great. But truly his younger brother shall be greater than he. And his seed shall become a multitude of nations. And he blessed them that day, saying, in thee shall Israel bless, saying, God make thee as Ephraim and as Manasseh. And he set Ephraim before Manasseh. And Israel said unto Joseph, behold, I die, but God shall be with you, and bring you again unto the land of your fathers. Moreover, I have given to thee one portion above thy brethren, which I took out of the hand of the Amorite with my sword and with my bow. So, Joseph is given this little history lesson by Jacob as Jacob recalls the blessing that God had given to him. And as he recalls the death of Joseph's mother and where she is buried, and then he asks for Joseph to bring his two sons forward because Jacob is so old, he's literally blind. He cannot see anything anymore. And he wants to bless these two boys with the same blessing, showing that the blessing was going from Joseph to his sons. And when he goes about this process, again, we have to understand some things about this blessing. Is not only is it symbolic in nature, but there was a certain way that it had to be carried out in order for it to be, quote unquote, the right way to do things, and for it to be honored and respected. And typically what would happen is that this blessing would be given to the firstborn. Now, Joseph was not the firstborn, yet he had received the blessing. God had put him in a prominent position. However, in this situation, he brings the two boys forward, and without noticing and realizing it, he puts them backwards to how they should have been actually placed when he brought them to Jacob, his father, meaning that Joseph took Manasseh in his right hand because the firstborn son would be the one to receive the greater blessing. He would be the one given the authority over the family, given the full authority over the finances. Essentially, he'd be the one that would be in charge after his father passed away. But Joseph, not thinking about this, puts Manasseh under the left hand of Jacob and Ephraim under the right hand of Jacob. And Jacob gives the blessing. And the blessing is the one that God had given to him and to Abraham and to Isaac, that they would be a multitude and that they would grow strong and that they would be blessed and that God would take care of them the same way that he had taken care of their fathers before them. Now, to you and I, this really doesn't seem like a big deal. You know, just switch the hands around, say the magic words again. But once this had been carried out, it was a binding thing. And that's what I'm talking about when I say we're going to learn more history and culture tonight than we are anything about really spiritual applications, okay? I mean, essentially what you could just gather from this is that you're supposed to reverence your parents. Joseph, even though he's the second over all of Egypt, he bows to his father here in the story, right? Showing him respect. Even when he disagrees with what his father does here when he blesses these children, he still respects the decision. And you and I, even when we're an adult, we're still supposed to respect our parents. We're still supposed to take into account what our parents do, but even more importantly, especially in this day and time, we ought to honor their dying wishes. And so, outside of those, what should really be common sense facts, what we see here is with this blessing, essentially, Jacob is giving everything, for the most part, to Joseph and then to Joseph's younger son, Ephraim. And so after he gives the blessing, Joseph realizes there's been a mistake. Then he says, no, my father. You have got your hand on the wrong kid. We got to switch the kids. But Jacob refuses. And he doesn't just refuse because, oh, it's binding, it's already been done, it's too late. But he refuses because he knew which child he had. His intent was always, more than likely, obviously, following the will of God, to give it to the younger son, because the nation of Ephraim, or the tribe of Ephraim, as you and I know them, was going to be a much larger, much better, much greater tribe than that of Manasseh. And so, he tells Jacob, no, I knew this when I did it. And notice what it says. It says, and it displeased Joseph. Meaning that he was not a fan of his father doing this, even though this had been done for him. Now, what's strange about this is that even though Joseph had been treated in this way, he received the blessing, even though he was technically the youngest son, he wants to honor men's traditions around how this blessing is given with his own children. And you can see this in their names. The name of Manasseh basically, essentially, has the idea of being the firstborn. That's really what the name indicates to mean by all forms and purposes. And it shows that Joseph, well, he kind of, you know, sort of maybe a little bit, had the same ideas around having the favorite children, okay? And the name of Ephraim carries with it the idea of being forgetful, meaning that he is the youngest son. That's essentially what comes into being. And what's interesting about this is that when you look at how they are named and what the consideration of the names are, it's just further proof that God is going to do the opposite of what men believe is the right thing or the more powerful thing to do. And so, what is it exactly that we're supposed to get from all of this, culturally, historically speaking? Well, what we're supposed to get from this is that God continually does what men think is the wrong thing to do to prove that he is the one who is ultimately in control. Even Joseph believes that it is Manasseh who is supposed to get the blessing, that that's the right thing to do. Yet Jacob, led by God, gives it to his younger son, the same way he had given it to his younger and arguably favorite son. And it displeases Joseph. It makes Joseph unhappy that he does this thing. And what he doesn't realize is that in doing this, the goal is not about doing what is right, culturally speaking, but rather doing what is going to gain God the most glory when this is all carried out as a whole. And so after Jacob does this, he looks to Joseph and says, behold, I die. But God shall be with you and bring you again unto the land of your fathers. Moreover, I have given to thee one portion above thy brethren, which I took out of the hand of the Amorite with my sword and with my bow. Now, obviously, Jacob doesn't literally die at this point. That's going to come in the next chapter when he brings in all of his sons and he gives them all the blessing. He tells them basically how this is all going to work out. He even talks about the good things and the bad things that all of his sons have done and why they're going to get what they get and why they don't get what they don't get. But in this chapter, What I want you to take away from it is, number one, to reverence the decisions and the choices of your family. To be respectful, that doesn't mean you have to do everything they ask you to do if it's unreasonable. But you should always respect them. You should always attempt to be honorable of them, and to show them the respect that they deserve for your raising and your upbringing and these kinds of things. But the biggest spiritual application that I want you to take away from this is that God does not use things that seem wise to men to get the work of God done. There's never a point in the Bible that you're going to read a story where God uses what men would expect God to use to accomplish his work. He never does that. Well, why? Because he can't gain any glory if it's something that was already possible in the minds of men or right in the minds of men to do. He can gain a whole lot more when he does something that men never thought would work, let alone would have thought was the right thing to do. And so, in this little snippet, those are the biggest pieces and the biggest indicators. So we do have a very short one tonight. Not going to be a long one. I wanted to save 49 and 50 for you for next week because there's a whole lot going on when Jacob calls in all his sons, and we really learn a lot of Jacob's opinions about his kids, good and bad alike, and why the tribes are the way they are, and how all the positions and things that come to be by the time we get into Exodus come to be. But this is a good way to introduce what's going to be happening in chapter 49 as we are looking at the idea and the concept of blessings and why it's so important and so significant that Jacob does the opposite of what is not only expected by Joseph, but as you're going to see when we get into chapter 49 and probably very likely 50 next week, why it was unexpected by his brothers as well. So, as you're going about your week, try to be respectful of your parents. Try to be reverent as much as possible. I know not all of them make that an easy thing to accomplish, but try to be reverent. And also, tuck away this bit of information for next week about the significance of blessings, that they were to be honored and they were considered to be law. They were things that you did not deserve, yet that you were given authority over. And that it was supposed to always go to the eldest son, when you're going to see, like in this chapter, that's not going to be the case next week as Jacob talks to all of his children. And so that is the end of Genesis chapter 48. I hope that everyone...